All right, so today we're going to continue on our series, Easter People. I hope you've enjoyed this series so far, looking at what on earth does the resurrection have to do with us all these weeks later. It changes who we are. It changes our makeup as a people of God. And so let's jump into Luke chapter 18 together. I'm going to start in verse 1, and we're going to read through verse 8 together. Luke 18, 1 to 8. And then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor care about humanity, yet because this widow troubles me, I will answer her, unless by her continual coming she wearies me. And then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. Shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on earth? Will he really find faith on earth? There's an old fable, a short story that I cannot find the origin of this story. I can't find who wrote it. It's one of those stories that's been passed down for decades, and it goes like this. There's an old farmer who farmed on his land, and he had a faithful donkey that he loved that worked so hard for him. He loved this donkey, but one day the donkey was wandering on the property, and the donkey fell into a huge, deep well. This well was an abandoned well. It needed filled up. And he couldn't find his donkey, and he ran to look for him, and he looked down this deep well, and he saw the donkey at the bottom of the well, crying in pain. And so the farmer couldn't figure out what to do. For hours, he tried to lasso a rope down there to try to pull up the donkey. He got neighbors, couldn't figure it out. The farmer was so upset. Finally, after watching the donkey be in so much pain, he realized, I got to do something here. I got to figure it out. But he couldn't. He couldn't figure it out. And he realized, well, this well is an old well. The donkey is an old donkey that was probably going to pass away very soon. Sounds very morbid, I know. And so he decided he's going to put the donkey down and bury the well at the same time. He can't pull the well, or he can't pull the donkey out, and so he figured to cut his losses, to give up hope, and that the donkey should just pass away by being buried underneath the well. So he called more neighbors together. They got shovels. They started throwing dirt in. The donkey began to realize what was happening. The donkey started to panic and yell even louder, panicking, freaking out, because he knew they were burying this himself alive. And so they kept throwing in dirt, all the people around the hole, digging and throwing more dirt in. But suddenly they realized they didn't hear the donkey as much anymore. And so they figured, okay, maybe the donkey suffocated. So they look down, and what they see, though, is that the donkey is still on top of the soil, but a little closer to them. You see, what the donkey was doing was every single shovel of dirt that came its way to bury it, to kill it, ended up shaking it off and climbing up above it to get a little higher, a little closer to the edge. And so over time, with every single shovel of dirt, this donkey got closer and closer and closer, and it never, ever gave up once. You see, the farmer gave up, but the donkey did not, to the point where the donkey, because of so much dirt, was able to climb out of the well and was alive and well and lived even longer. See, this short story has been used for many decades to illustrate the two realities that exist in humanity, in you and I. There is a propensity within us to give up when we see that things cannot work out the way we think they should. When something gets so hard that we end up counting our losses and thinking to ourselves, well, hey, I gave it a shot, I tried, I'm just going to count it all as a loss and move on. That's what the farmer does, right? But then on the other side of the story, you have the other part of humanity, the part within us that wants to keep going, that wants to fight, that recognizes, no, I don't care what comes my way, I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to slow down, I'm going to remain persistent. That's the donkey. And so with every single shovel that comes, the donkey stays persistent. The donkey does not give up and continues to climb above it. Why? Because the donkey's not giving up. And that's the part of us that we have within us, but sadly, most of the time, what wins in the end is the desire to want to give up. It's the desire to want to throw in the towel when something seems so challenging, so taxing. It takes more mental energy and strength to keep fighting than it does just to chalk it up in the lost column. And so we battle inside when things come our way. We don't want to keep going. We want to take the easy way out. We want to avoid the difficulty. We want to run from it. Man, but what about Easter people? What about people who follow Jesus? What about people who live on the other side of the resurrection? What if we could be those who demonstrate the kind of tenacity, the kind of fight that the world would look at and says, man, these people don't give up. When they've got conviction, when they've got something that God has called them to do, they do not stop. They stand for what is right, and they just keep going and going and going. They don't ever, ever give up. What if we as Easter people looked at things that came our way and recognized that they were opportunities to climb above it versus being buried beneath by what's coming our way? All because we recognize that our King is still alive. We still have hope. It's not over. And because Jesus is alive, we know that he has given us his Spirit to continue fighting. Sounds good, right? It sounds great. It sounds like, yes, that's what we're called to be. That's what we see in the book of Acts. That's what we see in the New Testament, in church history. Groups of people who followed Jesus who never gave up, never gave in to the enemy, but always fought forward to what they knew was right and what God was calling them to do with their lives. It sounds great, but man, how do you get to that point? How can you get to the point where you're like the donkey and you just look at what's coming your way, as negative as it might be, and you climb above it? How do you do that? You see, in this little story we read from Luke 18, we see not only the recipe for how to be those people, but we also see the image of what Jesus is looking for in you and I right now as Easter people, as people who demonstrate to the world that we follow Christ, that we stand for something different. But the thing that we stand for isn't just a label. It's not just a doctrine that we believe with our heads. It's a way of life that shows the world, because our King is alive, we don't stop. Because of what God has spoken to us, the dreams, the visions, the things, the people he's put around us, we don't ever give up loving them. We don't ever give up the dreams God has spoken. That should be the hallmark of the Christian. But sadly, so often it's not. Let's jump into this story a little more, and let's look at how Jesus, using three characters in this little story, highlights for us how we can be those people. Because I know you want to be. I want to be. We want to be those people who look at things, as devastating as they might be, as challenging as they might be, and be able to stand strong and say, it's all right. I know who I believe. I know who I follow. I'm going to find a way through it. I'm going to come out the other end better, stronger. This isn't a pep talk. This is Christianity. This is how the church has lived for so long. So let's look at this again, but let's look at the first character that Jesus points out, and it's the judge. The unjust judge. Look at verse 2. There was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. And then there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. But he wouldn't for a long time. But afterward, he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor fear man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming, she will weary me. So Jesus brings this story to the forefront for his followers, talking about a judge first and foremost. Now let's get some background context here. Jesus is speaking to people, a group of people maybe in the streets of Jerusalem, and he's trying to help them understand and remember who God is. Now we got to ask the question, why would he do this? Why does he have to even say this short story, this little parable? Because he's speaking to people who forgot who they follow. He's speaking to people who have forgotten the one they worship. He's speaking to a group of people that have forgotten all the amazing things of God's track record, what he has done in history. And because they have forgotten who God is, they have distorted what they expect from the Father, the kind of relationship that they're walking in. So Jesus shares this story to try to bring them back together to a place of remembrance of who they serve, the God they follow. Remember, this is the same God who parted the Red Sea, the same God who redeemed Israel from Pharaoh, the same God who rescued Rahab, the same God who restored David, the same God who was with Gideon in the Old Testament with a few hundred fighting a battle. See, they knew all these Old Testament stories, but they lacked the understanding of who God was. And so Jesus had to use this story to show how a bad judge who answered the cries of a widow in comparison with a good God, yet you have forgotten who he is. And because they've forgotten who he is, they're giving up. Jesus sees in their eyes they've lost the fight. They're devastated by Roman oppression, by the suffering, by what they've been going through. And so he tries to instill within them the desire, the passion to remember who they serve, to remember, don't give up. You serve a God with a long track record who has done amazing things. So how can he not help you now? And so they listen. And Jesus tries to get them to come to this place of understanding. And he uses this story of a widow to make them understand. See, think about your life for a moment. Let's think about if we take for granted who we worship, who we serve. You know, we go through Sunday school, many of us. We hear the stories over and over. We read our Bibles in the Old Testament and the New Testament. We hear these stories, but so often when we find difficulties and hardships that come and we say a prayer of frantic crying out to God, do we really with conviction stand with boldness knowing who we follow, what he has done, where he has been? And maybe you're lacking any story to grab onto to remember a track record. Okay, well, think about your life. Think about where you were when God found you, when God redeemed you. Think about where you might still be now and how far you still are away from the Father, but he still loves you and extends grace and mercy. Is that fact alone not enough to move us to a place of recognizing, wait a second, this one I worship has given me so much mercy, so much provision in life, things that this could have happened or that could have happened, but here I am in a relationship with the Father. See, that alone should rekindle and remind us of who we follow, which then instills a certain amount of fight within us to stay the course no matter what comes our way. Now, maybe you're thinking, okay, that's great. I had a day when I gave my life to Christ. It was wonderful. But ever since then, I haven't seen God move. I haven't seen, you know, God do these amazing things in my life. I get it. You know, the people Jesus spoke to, they weren't there when the Red Sea parted. They weren't there when the manna rained down from heaven. They weren't there for when Gideon and God partnered and did amazing things. They weren't there. So they, the one Jesus is speaking to, like us, have to rely on past memories of God's providence. But here's the question. If we haven't seen God move, does that discredit his character? Does it discredit who he is? If we haven't seen God do these amazing things and our prayers be answered, or the things that have happened, we ask, why, God? Does it discredit his track record? No. But for many of us, we allow it to. You see, God's faithfulness, God's character, especially in comparison with a bad judge in this story, his character is not wrapped up in the timing of his answers to prayer, or even whether prayer is answered or not. God's character will always be what it is. He will always be faithful. If God's character, if God's faithfulness was dependent on his ability to answer us when we cry out to him, then the Bible would be full of God's failures. Because time and time again, the people of God have cried out to God to move. They have cried out to God to do something, and there's been silence on the other end. But what do we see in many of the prophets, many of these stories? They don't give up. They remain strong. They remain steadfast because they remember, whether prayers answered or not, whether things work out the way they want or not, God is still God. He is always still good. It's a mystery we can't explain. Our human frailty wants to butt up against this and get angry with God and say, no, you're a horrible God because you're not doing what I want you to do. But we don't understand God's faithfulness if that's the way we think. God's faithfulness is covenant relationship. See, in covenant relationship, you come together in relationship. You don't come together based on what you can do for me, what I can do for you. You come together because you love and support one another. You abide together. God did this with Israel. God does this with the church. This is what he does. And within that context, we understand that we're not supposed to base everything on whether God does what we want him to do or not. We base everything on the faithfulness that we are to have, the tenacity, the persistence in coming to him, because he is always there for us. You see, as the story continues, we see this widow. The widow is a model for us to follow of persistence. But remember, the widow and the judge, these aren't real characters. These are stories Jesus is using to pull out real life truth. But let's look at the widow a little more and let's see what Jesus is looking for in us. I'm going to pick up in verse 4. He would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, because she troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me out. Literally, she annoys me. And that's what the judge is saying. My goodness, this woman won't give it a rest. Yes, fine, what do you want? Okay, fine, go. Yes. This is how the judge is acting. You see, the widow, who's held up as this model for what we're to follow, she shows tenacity. She shows this unwillingness to give up because she knows what is right. She shows the ability to, like, you know, the donkey, to climb above whatever it was she was going through and to the judge keep knocking on the door saying, now, now, now. George Mueller was an amazing Christian leader in the UK many, many, many years ago. Centuries ago, actually. Began many orphanages, many ministries to help people in need. They discovered in his journal a consistent topic over and over, pretty much once a week, for many, many years, decades. And it was him praying for salvation of two of his friends that he knew from a young age. He prayed for these friends his entire life. And you know what happened in the end? He died. And they never came to Christ. But in his journal, over and over, what do we see? Him praying, crying out to God, please, God, please, God. Bring them to your salvation. Bring them grace. Bring them to their knees in repentance. Let them see the glory of God like I have seen. But he passed away. But you know what happened? At his funeral, one of those friends gave their lives to Christ and began to work in his ministry to help him. Actually helped the ministry after he passed. The other friend, 6 months later, gave his life to Christ because of the testimony of that friend. So you see, for George Mueller, he was persistent. He kept going and going and going. But unlike the widow, he didn't get to see the fruit of not giving up. He didn't get to see the answer to his persistence. But the widow did. Now let's be honest about something. We would be mistaken if we thought the moral to this little story was that persistence pays off and God will always answer prayers if we're persistent. That's not the moral of the story. That's what we want it to be. That's what we pray it is. But that's not what Jesus is pointing out here. What Jesus is trying to get us to see, and the question he wants to haunt us day and night, is will the people of God display an undying persistence because they know who they worship? Will the people of God display an undying persistence because they know who they worship? You see, persistence and that determination we see in the widow, it's not tied to the outcome necessarily. It's tied to the expectation, the desire, the frustration of always coming, come on, let's go. And Jesus draws on that persistence to give an analogy for you and I, that if this bad judge is this way, yet that woman is persistent, how much more so to the God we serve, the God we worship, who holds all things in his hands, how much more so should we be persistent with him, living lives of faith and trust, coming to him with whatever is coming our way, not giving up, but keep coming back for more and more of his presence, of his trust, of his peace. That's what Jesus is trying to get us to understand. That by giving up, we're going the opposite direction. We're going backwards. But by staying persistent in the relationship we have with the Father, that is what he is looking for. And as we stay persistent, we let God worry about what only God can do. If we worry about the things that only God can do, we're missing it. Because all God wants us to do is remain persistent in this relationship, trusting him that the people that we're struggling with, the situations we're going through, the dreams he has given us, no matter how big or crazy they might be, we are persistent. We do not give up. And we allow him to do what only he can do. That's what he's looking for. And let's not forget who Jesus chooses to do this model story through. It's a widow. In their day, widows were the lowest on the totem pole who dealt with so many financial hardships. They had no one to take care of them, no networks of people, no programs, nothing. And Jesus is showing that it's this one right here who models what it looks like. She gets it. Do you ever feel like maybe because of who you are, your situation, maybe God might not care as much about you or your prayers because maybe so-and-so over here or this situation is much deeper? Do you realize that is a lie from hell? God cares so much about every single thing that causes us deep anxiety and fear. He cares so much about who we are. No matter how little we think we have to offer, no matter where we come from, he cares about us equally. Jesus has a reason why he chose a widow to use this story for. Because he's showing the disciples who he's speaking to, those peasant farmers who are lowest on the totem pole as well, to show them, hey, God cares about you. He's with you. He's for you. So be persistent. Cry out day and night because he's there. You know, I love what Shannon read earlier from others because that fits right in. There are people in this room, out there, their value is so low in their minds because they don't measure up to some standard that's being told to them or that exists in culture. But oh my gosh, God is looking for every single person on any single spectrum, on anything, to be that person who is persistent and faithful, to believe in the impossible, that God could do it, and God will. In his time, in his way, God will honor our faithfulness. It might not look the way we want. It could change along the way. We don't worry about it. What we worry about is being like this widow, faithful, persistent, with what's in front of us, giving it all we've got, the best we can, never, ever, ever giving up. You know, I've come to think that there's really two kinds of Christ followers. I'm not the monopoly on Christian theology, so this is just from experience. There's two kinds of people who walk this path of Christianity. There's the one kind who says they want this and this and this from God, and they have these high expectations and all these things, and they want to see God move and, you know, all this good stuff that you might hear, but then they fail to do the things that require the faithfulness. They fail to be in the Word of God crying out, God, show me in your Word. What are you speaking to me? I'm reading. I don't understand. Show me. There's no painstaking effort trying to understand. They might say, I want to be so close to God, I want to feel his love, I want to feel this redemption, this grace, this power that I hear about, but they're often the people who don't pray. They can't even give time to God, let alone, you know, expect him to do something. These kinds of people, they talk a lot, but there's no persistence, there's no faithfulness. So they get angry with God when he doesn't do what they expect him to do. They say, I can't follow this God. Look what he has not done for me. But then you have this other group. They're faithful. They're persistent. They don't give up. They keep fighting. They do what they can do. They hang on every single syllable that they might hear from God through Scripture. They hang on every single moment they give to God in prayer, hoping that they can just deepen their relationship with God. And you know what happens over time? The things this group prays for become secondary. What becomes primary is this deep, loving relationship that they form with God because they've been faithful. And you see how that turns around? The first group, what's primary? God, what you haven't done in my life. Therefore, I'm giving up. But that group's usually, you know, they give up quick, right? But then you have the other group. The other group remains faithful in what's in front of them. They do the simple things well. And over a long period of time, the things they pray for, they become secondary. And they still cry out to God. They don't give up. But what's primary? It's a deep peace they feel with the Father because they have been faithful. They have been persistent. They know that God is with them. They know that the love of Christ compels them. They are one with the Father. So when things come their way, curveballs, and things don't end up the way they expect them to in life, and things kind of go a little haywire, it's that group that's able to stand the storm and be strong. It's the other group that usually unravels because they don't have that trust. They don't have that faith. God, are you with me? I'm not talking about a faith like if I got enough, then God can do what I tell him to do. No, that's false faith. That exists in America, and that's heresy. When we say faith, what we mean is what it's always meant since the first century, which is deep, abiding trust. Not like the amount of money, like if I got enough faith, I can shell some out to God, and he's going to do what I tell him to do. No, no, no. Okay, let's make sure when we say the word faith, we understand what we're talking about. But man, that second group, they get it. That's the widow. She got it. And we got this last verse that Jesus gives that highlights the next character and the final character. And it's you and me. Jesus says, I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? Do you notice the doubt in Jesus' voice? Do you notice the concern? Will he really find faith when he comes? Is he going to find a group of people that have been faithful? Is he going to find a group of people that have given up and they talk a loud game? Or are they going to be a group of people who are faithful, even in the midst of being killed, persecuted, struggle, hardship, but they don't give up? They stay the course. No matter what God has spoken to them, man, they just keep going. Is that the kind of people the Son of Man will find when he returns? You do know Jesus is returning. Jesus is going to come back. It's okay to recognize that the world thinks we're crazy because of this, okay? We are nuts to the world's eyes. Praise God for it. If we fit right in with the world, then something's wrong with our Christianity. Jesus is coming back. But even now, he looks, he has ascended on high, and he looks to find men and women of God who have faith, who have trust, who don't give up, who pray day and night and cry out to their Father. Not just because they got to have something happen, but because they love him. And they know that he is the only place to turn. He is the ultimate source of provision. Michelle and I were talking by the fire the other night. Usually we'll have like our best conversations around a bonfire. And we were having a great conversation on whether or not prayer actually works. Now we both know what prayer does work. We weren't debating, we were in agreement. But we were talking about, well, does prayer really work? Does it really move the heart of God? If God already knows what he's going to do, then what's the point? What is really the point? We chewed on that, and it was silence, and we were just thinking about it together. And I shared with her something that she knew, but I shared this with her. I said, you know, honey, there's been something that I've been praying for a really long time, probably over a decade, and it's always in my prayer list. It's always in my rotation of things I pray for. And I told her, I said, but that thing I've been praying for, that thing hasn't happened. It hasn't happened once. And she was talking to me, we were talking about it, like, well, what does it make you feel? What do you think about that? And I said, but it's okay. Because in the span of being faithful and praying for this thing that I told her about, it's a little personal, I'm sorry, I know you're probably all thinking, well, what's the thing? Just trust me, it's a thing, and it's just for my brain, okay? I said to her, I said, in the midst of all this time of praying, there's not been one part of me that has been angry, upset with God. I haven't had one time of, God, why? What's the deal? Come on. And I told her, I believe the reason is because over the long period of time of being faithful in that thing I've been praying for, there's been such a deep weaving of trust that has taken place that whether God does it the way I want him to do it or not, it doesn't matter anymore. Because what matters is this deep covenant that I experienced with the Father, that I trust him over this area. So I've released it. And because there is deep relationship through prayer and through persistence, it's okay. Now, I'm not the perfect model for a life of faithfulness. I can be fickle at times, okay? But I believe that's what God's looking for in us. That no matter what the things are that we battle, that we're going through, that we're able to be persistent coming to him over and over, trusting him to the point where because there is such a deep relationship, because we've been faithful in prayer, in scripture, in serving, in worshiping, we're able to release and know that he's got it. And we still stay persistent. We still do our rhythm of what we're called to do. We're faithful to what's in front of us. But because he is so good, so much better than a horrible judge in this story, we trust him. Doesn't take away pain, doesn't take away hardship. But what it does do is it brings all those things to a place of peace and recognition, knowing that God really is in control. He really is leading. You know, think about a marriage relationship. When you get married, you don't say your vows and you don't do all these things in a covenant marriage because you're hinging everything on, well, where will we live? What will we do? Where are we going to work? What kind of house will we have? Those things aren't the details when you say your vows. If they are, dear God, what are you doing? Right? No, the details that happen when you say your vows right here is you look at the person and you're saying, I trust you with my life, my heart. And that person is telling you, I trust you with my life, my heart. And in that marriage relationship, what you are doing is you are pledging to be faithful to one another day in, day out, through thick and thin, in sickness and in health, in poverty and in wealth, all of it, because it's a covenant relationship. There's persistence there in coming to one another. It has nothing to do with where you live and what you do. But somehow for many of us, in our persistence with our Christianity, we base it on how we feel. We base it on, what have you done for me, God? Where have you been? That's not what you signed up for. When you gave your life to Christ, you came into a covenant relationship with the God of the universe who created the cosmos, who created Everest, who crafted out the Grand Canyon, who did all these amazing things, who put the stars every which way where they're supposed to go to make the Big Dipper just because he had a sense of humor, right? To make it Orion's Belt. He did all of this. It's that same God who cares on a one-on-one basis and level for your needs and desires. And he says, here I am. Every single day, I am persistent in coming to you. Are you persistent in coming to me? Have you given up? Are you still fighting? We're going to get real practical now as we kind of bring this home. There's people in your life that you want to give up on. Okay, don't act like there's not. You know there is. Me? No. I love it. Like Jesus. I love them all. No. Be real. There's people in your life you want to give up on. There's people who hurt you, who harm you. There's family members. There's friends. There's spouses. Spouse. If you have spouses, see me. We'll talk. Right? Spouse. Right? You have people that cause you so much grief. Do you really think you should be giving up on them? Now, is this abuse or physical safety? Totally different story, but let's stay in this realm first. Should you really be giving up on them? Or might God be looking for you to exercise that kind of persistence in that person's life to show them the love of Jesus? And it might take a long period of time. Maybe situations you're in. Difficulties, hardships at work that you know God's called you to stay positive, to stay firmly rooted in. Are you wanting to give up? Has God told you to give up? You see, sometimes we let our emotions, the frustrations get the best of us, but maybe those are opportunities for us to embody exactly what we see in the widow, to stand strong, to keep fighting, and to keep going. What about your dreams? What about the visions God has given you? The far out things, the crazy things, or even the mundane normal things that are equally as good. God, I want this marriage, I want my marriage to be this way. God, I want my family to serve in a capacity where we're doing it together. Or God, you've given me this idea that's crazy for ministry and serving people, but man, everyone's gonna think I'm nuts and I don't got the money for it. Or are you giving up? Why? Don't forget what the scriptures say. He who has begun a good work in you is faithful to take it to completion. Don't give up on the journey when you're so close to God doing something that is so unique and powerful that might be totally different than what you expect. Because that's what God does. People, circumstances, visions and dreams God has given us, don't give up. Unless God has told you to divert your path, do not give up. Because the world needs to see people that stick it out. The world needs to see people who do the unthinkable because of the God that they know they serve. That's the widow. She's not just a lady who's banging on the door over and over. She's a chosen vessel of God who is standing up with conviction for injustice, and she does not ever once give up. This morning when you came in, you got a little sheet of paper. Go ahead and look around. You can look for it. It's in the brochure. If you didn't get one, there's some in the back tables. And if you don't have one, that's okay. I want you to write something down. This morning, we're going to kind of put our money where our mouth is, or however the saying goes. We're going to write down some things that God's speaking to us right now. I know there's a person or people. I know there is a circumstance or a trial you're going through. And I know there are dreams that God's put in your heart for your family, for your kids, for ministry, for your church family, whatever it might be. There are dreams God has spoken to you that you have let be buried underneath so many shovelfuls of dirt and junk and other things that are not inappropriate to say from the pulpit, right? That you just let it sit there. And you've long forgotten about it. And you are just now remembering, wait a second, I serve the God who resurrects the dead. I've been equipped with the Spirit of God who is alive and well, who brings wisdom and toughness and tenacity. So bring it back to the surface. In a moment, actually right now, Susan, come on up. I want you to write down those things. But before you do, I want to tell you this. And this is where I'm going to be very blunt and honest. And you're not going to like it, and that's okay. It would be a lie for me to say, just be persistent. Don't give up because your blessing's right around the corner. Nah, that's a farce. It's not true. I'm not God. You're not God. We don't know. And guess what? Here's the best part. It's not our job to know. Because when we try to know how everything works out, when we hold God to some time limit, we lose because we're trying to make ourselves God. He's looking for faithfulness. He's looking for obedient hearts who don't give up. And if we can do that part, he will do his part. Whether in this life or the next, we will see him work in beautiful ways that are far beyond the shallow expectations we often impose on the Father. So let's do our part this morning. I'm going to give you a couple minutes, and I want you to write down, I want you to think. If you got your phone, maybe make a note. Three things: person, circumstance, a dream that you will not give up on. And we're going to come to the table and celebrate together. But go ahead, you're free.